You're through to the Kiss and Not Tell hotline. Press 1 to get down. Press 2 to leave a cheeky message. Be careful what you say. These recordings can and will be shared. To hear those options again, press the hash key.
Yeah, I get to press 1 first.
Press any button to return to the menu. You're through to the Kiss and Not Tell hotline.
Okay, I gotta do the cheeky
press
message.
Press 1 to get down. Please leave a message after the beep. When you have recorded your message, press the hash key.
Hey, everybody. This is Adam.
Hey, and it's Doug. Hey, LaRue.
From imvdb.com, the Internet Music Video Database, just leaving our cheeky message.
It's being cheeky.
And yeah, we love the video. And we're just cheeky lads in general. So, you know,
just in general.
This is the kind of line that we would be calling anyway, but we thought we'd call LaRue's line. So anyway, we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you. Goodbye.
You could hear the disappointment in that automatic recording voice.
The dumbest fucking shit you did.
Well, hello everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another edition of the Music Video Land podcast, brought to you by super good friends at imvdb.com, the Internet Music Video Database. My name's Adam. I run literally everything with IMVDB, and the person who just takes all the credit over here is Mr. Doug Klinger in Pompano Beach, Florida. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing great. Doing super good. Just taking credit all day.
Yep, just parties, and alcohol, and the drugs. Thanks all the production companies for sending us the free drugs. Adam Alexander is not here with us this week because he's just gone missing. We don't know what happened, you know, whatever. I think he's had something to do with the subway plans they mentioned last episode. But don't worry about that at all, because we have an awesome guest with us this week on the podcast, director/director of photography, Mr. Kevin Phillips. Welcome to the podcast, Kevin.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
And we should mention, we will have a link to Kevin's page, as well as a few other links, Kevin's IMVDB page, and a few other sites on the show notes, which you can find at imvdb.com/podcast, because some of Kevin's work includes 3005 by Childish Gambino, directed by Hiro Murai, as well as a video we were just discussing just a few weeks ago, Go by Grimes, as well as a Waitlist by Washed Out, and The City, hashtag LA by Walter French, directed by our good friend Mr. Matt Bowman. And we also linked to a video this is the greatest short film I think I've ever seen in my life, called Basketballs. We will definitely link to that.
Oh man, I'm really glad you like that. That's great to hear. Thank you.
The narrative of that is just so, it's like woven, so complex.
It just fit, right? When you watch it, I think it's just a perfect fit.
It does, yeah. It's just, you know, you don't know how it's going to end, but then, you know, that takes that twist at the end.
Man, I really, you know, to be honest, that film had a lot more going for it in its, like, inspiration phase that involved an anthill, like a nearby anthill, and, like, macro shots of these ants that are getting, like, launched in the air because of the sex and the basketball.
So
I think do that. I never got to do that, and I should do that. And I keep thinking in the back of my mind, I gotta actually make that a reality. Otherwise, I just will never be satisfied, ever.
Well, and neither will we. And so, yeah, let's hope that this is that boost you need to give that director's cut what it deserves.
And if anybody is wondering what the hell we're talking about, please go. We'll put it in the link in the show notes.
Yeah, just pause the podcast. I don't care if you're driving, listening to this on the road. Pause the podcast and just watch this video. It's like 50 seconds long, and it will improve your day significantly. So go for it.
So this week, Duretti Shores was released by Lemonade, directed by Oscar Boysen, which you DP'd on. And I want to talk a little bit about this video, because this is one of our favorite videos of the week.
Awesome.
And not just because of the nudity, but because of, for anybody who hasn't seen it, it takes place sort of in a European kind of, was this shot in Venice?
Yeah, baby, Venice.
Nice. Shot in Venice, there's a kind of a mixture of younger teens and older women, and there's a lot of kind of beach scenes. It's kind of hard to describe. You kind of have to go see it. But I was wondering when you guys shot this and how you guys found yourself in Venice. Did you go there to shoot this video?
No. Well, it was a multi-tiered thing. Oscar hit me up because he had a project. I know Oscar from New York. Oscar's a really talented filmmaker. By all accounts, an actual, like, I would say, like a real filmmaker. Mm-hmm. He produces for the Safdie brothers and for Noah Baumbach, and he directs as well. And he's got a very discerning eye and great, great taste and incredible knowledge of film history. And so Oscar hit me up. I had known him through mutual friends for a minute, and he had this project. It's kind of hard to describe, but it was essentially Kuwait, the country Kuwait's entry into the Venice Architectural Biennale. And with that, they wanted to make a short film. And so Oscar hit me up about coming to Venice, Italy, to shoot this Kuwaiti short film with an Italian crew. And it sounded great. And it was based off Kuwait's first publication, novelization of the novella called Munera. And it was a short story about a superstitious woman who's afraid she's not going to have a baby. It's not great literature, but they made a great script out of this. The Kuwaitis and Oscar, they kind of gathered together and they made a great script. And to cut this off short, because there's a lot of depth to this whole story, Oscar was like, man, listen, I'm putting my place in sublet for like 2 months. And he was from New York. And he said, let's shoot, while I got you out there in Italy, let's shoot some other things. What do you say? And I said, of course, for sure. And so we stayed in Venice and we traveled to Albenga and Alassio for like 20 days or so. And so we did the Kuwaiti short film, which was like 2 weeks. And right there after, a couple days after we had a little bit of downtime, we launched ourselves into this Lemonade video in which Lemonade, the band, are buddies with Oscar. They, I think, were touring. I don't remember exactly. But they made their way over to Venice to do this video. And that's kind of how that went down. It was a two-day shoot. I got a first AC named Tiz. I ran through like six first ACs during this whole run in Venice, but it was they're all fantastic crew. Jeannie and camera were incredible, awesome Italians.
The video kind of seemed like it, if I have it correctly, kind of was decided on while you guys were still out there, is that right?
Well, yeah, so Oscar had written a treatment beforehand to run by the band and get them stoked on the idea of shooting in Venice. I think one of his selling points was like, this would be the only other music video ever shot in Venice aside from a Madonna video, if I recall correctly. And the band got stoked, and Oscar had a treatment that, I don't want to say it was loose or abstract, because it was pretty precise, and he's a pretty accurate guy, but it definitely kind of molded itself in the production of the video. Come editing, I think the video turned out to be what we expected it to be and what we desired for it to be while we were shooting it. But the treatment, I think, was not a far cry from what we shot, but it was a little bit different. What remained for sure, and if Oscar's listening, I hope he doesn't get mad if I get this wrong, but what remained for sure was the beach segment. We definitely really wanted to kind of capture that, like, you know, very photographic, so to speak, moments on the beach and kind of like bring them into this vibe.
It seems like there was a lot of opportunity for you to kind of go nuts with like just finding things to film, because there seems to be a lot of shots that I'm not even sure that people are aware they're in them.
For sure. In the beach moments, for sure. We just sniped it. It was a schlep, the whole shoot, you know. I mean, it was like us running around with an Alexa and this like old Cook Veritol, and like something like a 24 to, oh God, what is it, 180 maybe? I can't remember that exact range. But it was this old uncoated lens. It was extremely beautiful, but not really small by any means. And then we had an extender on it, a doubler. And so we were, we just like planted ourselves on the beach in like a crowded area for hours and just kind of looked around. And then we would move to where we saw things in the distance, and we would line up and just get the shots. And everyone on the beach, you know, nobody's moving fast on the beach except those that are running out to the water. Everyone's like moving kind of at their own pace. So it was like a beautifully kind of meditative filming experience, if you can imagine.
And there's Adam mentioned there are some, you know, women in their later years kind of like sexualized a little bit in the videos. Did you guys have stuff like planned out of what you were trying to capture with this beach stuff? Or did you kind of just let the beach kind of dictate that?
No, definitely had an idea, at least kind of a concept of like the type of material that we were wanting to capture and like what we expected to find. Just unique moments of like people as a concept kind of in this environment. There was definitely like, you know, sexuality that we wanted to find in the moments. And there's some that we staged as well, for sure. And some of the people are definitely, you know, aware that we were filming them. And like, you know, we kind of got these moments with their agreement, so to speak. But it was by the time we made this video, I think Oscar and I were on such a similar wavelength from like making like this real cinema with this short film to like, you know, and being in like the thick of it to launching into this video, that it was just kind of it just made sense. The language was already there. So it wasn't like a question of like what to capture or what not to capture. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. One thing that I definitely wondered about watching the video, maybe it kind of flew by me, is the kind of like hand communication that you had to capture between people, not just on, especially on boats, but in other places. I was wondering what what you and Oscar talked about in terms of what that would play, what role that would play in the video, and you know, how closely you wanted to get to that.
For sure. I think Oscar and I have an equal like affinity for gestures, and just even down to like a really almost like basic idea of like the human body and like form. Not to sound pretentious, but I think that there's something that's like, you know, that we both like find like really interesting about that, and how that relates to language and how that relates to just communication, and how Italy has these like, you know, renowned like gestures that like kind of, you know, mean different things. And a lot of it's tied to like mafia. A lot of it's tied to, I think a lot of it just goes way, way back. I can't really say for sure exactly, but I know that Oscar was very much in the know of like wanting to capture this type of language. Oscar had made a previous video actually for a band that escapes me right now, but it's excellent. And there's this wonderful sequence of police officers using hand signals that's kind of like scattered around that video. That's like really, really, really well done. The whole thing is so well done. And I think he kind of wanted to carry that into this video to see how this one video that like takes place in New York City can relate to a video that takes place in Italy.
I'm curious because you talk a lot about Oscar and how he has a extensive film background, and you know, he was very deliberate in a lot of the things that he's doing. And the last video that released that you worked on, Go by Grimes, is directed by Grimes herself, who doesn't have as extensive, obviously, of a film background. Grimes is a musician first. I'm curious if you can kind of compare the two working relationships with those two directors and how they differ from and how they're similar.
For sure. I would say that I truly believe that I had like great working relationships with both directors. And as a matter of fact, with like most of the directors I've worked with recently, as of the past, you know, number of months, have been very rewarding for their differences and for their similarities. Whereas I would say that Oscar is very discerning and has, you know, a certain film history that he brings to the table. Working with Claire was extremely fresh and rewarding in the sense that she's very much an artist, first and foremost. Yeah, she's a musician, but I would say that she clearly has an energy and desire to express herself through like a number of mediums. You know, it makes sense to me that she wants to direct her own videos. I get it. You know. And as much as I would love to direct a video for for Claire. I think, you know, it totally makes sense that she wants to have that type of control. And that she wants to use that medium to further express her, you know, whatever it is that she wants to express. Claire, whereas not necessarily bringing direct film reference to the table, brought a lot of inspiration in more abstract ways and a lot of things that we can relate to. We both really liked that Carly Rae Jepsen Call Me Maybe song, and we like really hit it off on that. And like that was pretty good. So it was like this really abstract kind of thing, you know, that like, it's like, oh yeah, this song fucking rules, right? This is like a great fucking pop song. And it's like, yeah, absolutely. We could high five on that. And then bring into the table, I mean, like, one thing, like in terms of film and whatnot, like, Claire is like a huge anime fan. And like, for all intents and purposes, so am I. And I will reference this show, Neon Genesis Evangelion, pretty much all the time, always, for anything I'm doing, if I, you know, really, really care about the project and really love the director. I just find it as like an incredible like foundation of like cinematic craft in all respects. And so Claire clearly was on the same page and like knew what I was talking about. And like we hit it off there. And then in other areas such as like making reference just to kind of certain type of humor that we could bring into the piece, certain type of dynamism that we could bring into the piece. She really is a huge Lord of Rings fan. Lord of the Rings, but what's that show called?
Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones. Yeah, see, that's the problem is I've watched like one episode of Game of Thrones. So she like comes in full force being like, I love Game of Thrones. And I'm like, I don't know Game of Thrones, but I can match you on a couple of other things here. And so, you know, despite like one absence and like a big inspiration point, we made up for it in like a number of others, you know, as abstract as they may have been, we managed to take them and relate them to film. And like that, to be honest, that was like so awesome. I love working relationships like that, where it's like, yeah, we're making a film, but let's not make it all about film. Let's like pull from, you know, some weird deep recesses of inspiration.
So how did the, like, so you guys bonded on the Carly Rae Jepsen song. Who kind of broached that first? Was it like, did it just like come out on, was it someone's ringtone?
I guess that was the point. I guess like that came after our first shoot day. We were in the desert at the dunes. It was like this insane schedule. Like the whole shooting experience was very intense. In the sense that, like, it was super rewarding, but it was very intense. The budget was tight, of course, as always. And Claire and, not to mention that Claire co-directed this video with her brother, Mac, who was, like, an incredibly special, wonderful human being, who brought, like, a lot to the table, who I believe is very talented, albeit young, but, like, you know. So Mac studied film in Canada, I believe, and had and came, brought to the table a pretty big passion for film, and a pretty good like knowledge basis of previous films, and we really were able to kind of like hit it off on that, and so that like kind of balanced the working relationship with Claire. It was actually like a really nice ideal kind of balance. They were really fun to work with as a brother and sister. They were very charming with one another, and like very respective of one another, and you know, very respective of me, and like end of the entire crew. The whole relationship, I think, everybody involved in that project brought a lot of love to it, because there was just a lot of positivity behind it, despite the challenges of making it. It was a very ambitious video. Mac and Claire are very ambitious. That's no joke. But I love that, you know, and to be honest, I think I would say that about Oscar too. Oscar is an extremely ambitious, filmmaker. But you know what they, it's okay because they bring this like severe passion to it, that you can't help but like believe in and like want to see through.
And in terms of like, how you got brought onto that project, was there and kind of the beginnings of it, was there a treatment, like a standard treatment that you would normally get on a music video, for the Grimes video?
I remember that I wanted to I've been speaking to Lana Kim and Jet Steiger at Ways and Means, two very good friends of mine in a production company that I work with often, who produced the Grimes video. I remember speaking to them back in the day when the Genesis video came out. Even before that, I really, truly wanted to direct that Genesis video. And I was like pining for it. And when that didn't happen, when it was announced that Claire was going to be directing it, I was up to shoot it for a minute. But then I couldn't do it. And Drew Bieniemann got it, who's like a lovely DP unto himself. And I went on to do something else. Still was a huge fan of Grimes. Still would have loved to have done something with her. And so when it came time for this, I got a phone call from Lana. And she said, like, you know, we want you to shoot this Grimes video. Like, are you available and whatnot? And I said, absolutely. Would love to do it. They're like, there's very little money. I'm like, okay. They're like, the treatment's ambitious. I'm like, okay. They're like, this is going to be like film school stuff. I'm like, all right, just send over the treatment. Let's see what's what. And they sent it. And it was not far off from what the video turned out to be. I mean, it was very basic treatment. I don't know who made the treatment, whether it was Mac or Claire. I have no idea. I don't think we ever really talked about that as much as I read the treatment. It was very clear in certain ways, very ambiguous in others, but that's fine. And then I met with Claire and Mac shortly thereafter, after they decided that they wanted me to shoot it, which was a huge, you know, pleasure, and I'm very grateful for that. And we met up and we just talked it out. And certain things changed, but like the very basic conceptual ideas are there, which is like, okay, we're going to shoot at Bombay Beach, we're going to shoot at the dunes, and we're going to shoot in the studio. And the studio feels like this, and the dunes feel like this, and Bombay Beach feels like this. And so that we had that as like a foundation, and we kind of just took it and built it up from there.
And we should mention that anybody who sees the name Rocco Prime, that is the new directing duo name for Claire Boucher and Mac Boucher. They have their own directing moniker, duo moniker. So maybe we will see work from them that maybe is not a Grimes video in the future. You never know. But how old is Mac? You mentioned he's young.
Yeah, I couldn't. Oh man, I don't want to get this wrong.
Just say maybe 12.
Yeah, Mac's 12, which was really impressive, if you can believe it.
So this is kind of a off top or kind of tangential thing, but one of the things that struck me with this video is that we don't like see that much anymore, I feel like, is the fisheye lens. I'm not sure if that's the correct term. Who brought that to the table?
Claire and Mac totally brought that to the table. That was one of the things that was really I was really into in the treatment. It was like this Missy Elliott Hype Williams reference. I believe it was Hype Williams did it. Yeah, and like they're like, we want to do this, and then you immediately see that image reference, and you think of like Claire in that, and it's just like, oh, absolutely. So she brought it, and Mac brought it, and yeah, and I was all about it.
And so the other video that we wanted to kind of mention, because this is a video we've talked a lot about in the podcast, is the 3005 video by Childish Gambino. Which to anybody who hasn't seen it, it's the video, or maybe has seen it and just doesn't remember the name, is the video with Childish Gambino and Donald Glover and the bear in the Ferris wheel at the fair. And it just goes around and around. And, this is one of those videos where I watch it and, you know, I love it. And I kind of wonder technically how, you know, you guys approach shooting this, because I can't think of any kind of environment where lighting conditions and all sorts of conditions change than going around a Ferris wheel. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I mean, that job, if I recall correctly, happened very quickly. I was on set doing a B camera for my buddy Eli Bourne, a very, very talented cinematographer. And I got the call from Hero. And it actually wasn't even a call as much as it was a text message and a video being like, hey buddy, how would we accomplish this shot? And it was him on a Ferris wheel with his producer, Kim, and he was holding this 5D sitting next to her, and he was kind of like doing this like kind of push in type of shot, and then like kind of I believe panning out to see the rest of the world outside the Ferris wheel cart. And so I thought about it, and I recall getting back to him quite quickly, saying like, we need kind of like a power slider, something that, you know, we can remote operate from the ground, but be like a 6-foot rail where the camera can, you know, kind of accomplish this move, but then it needs to be on like a Scorpio head so we can kind of pan it around. And wouldn't it be awesome to be, on a Scorpio head and have 3 axes that we can kind of twist and rotate around and whatnot. And so that conversation launched into the actual production of the video quite quickly. We contacted Doggycam, who are renowned for like incredible feats of technology in film, notably Children of Men. There's that scene where the whole 10-minute sequence with the car and Julianne Moore getting shot in the car and like the horde of people like, you know, crowding the car, that whole thing, the incredible cinematic set piece was, in part made by the help of Doggycam. Anyway, incredible dudes out of Los Angeles. They had just the tool for us. I remember it was a discussion of, can we do 4 feet or 6 feet? And it was an intense rigging situation, though, because the way Ferris wheels work with the gravity in the carts, we had to create an entire counterbalance system. So we had our key grip, who was great, rig this whole system along with Doggycam. And Bryce Bradley was my gaffer at the time, and we added some accent lights and some things in the back and some things to hit the lens specifically at certain points. We prepped for like, 8 hours, and then we shot for the remaining 4. It was a pretty, after, like, it was mainly just a prep, you know, like that was the real, real intense thing. Everything else was pretty dialed in. It's like, we're going to use this lens. It's going to be this far from the subject. It's going to be this high. And it's going to go like this fast. And we just operated the whole thing remotely from the ground. And it was a very rewarding, wonderful shoot. I love working with Hero.
And was this a true one shot? This video, because I know Hero has a way of being tricky sometimes, and has a lot of videos that appear to be one shot that may not actually be. Was this a true one shot for this one, or were you building in cut points as well?
We built in cut points in between verses. We built in cut points. So like when the camera would pan off Gambino and like out into the world, we would spin it and we would operate it and we would get as much as possible. And so that's the thing with the Scorpio head, is that it's cabled in. So it was an Alexa M, a small Alexa body on the Scorpio head that can kind of rotate on 3 axes. And so I'd be on the ground kind of turning this camera around. My first AC, Matt Sanderson, would be pulling focus. But we had to take into account how many rotations it could do before the cabling would round, you know, kind of wire in around it, essentially choke it, and then like, you know, fuck up. I believe we did the whole video in one pass, but we definitely kind of included cut points in there in the pre-visualization of it.
And this is another question that I think is more is born out of running a music video database, because we see a lot of, you know, the camera credits, you know, I think we have up to like 6 AC. I think there's one video that has like a 6th AC assistant camera. I don't know if that why that would ever happen. And I was wondering, for people who are listening who are not familiar with sort of how like the camera crew works between, you know, you as the head of it, the director of photography, and the other people around it, what is the job of, you know, the first AC as opposed to, you know, what you're doing?
Oh, he's a focus puller, first and foremost. And he is in charge of, you know, building the camera and making sure that every tool that is essential to, you know, capturing the photography of the film is there and fits, so to speak.
That makes sense.
And then many other little, like, wonderful details. The first AC is an essential position, and, you know, I'm very humbled by the talent of all the first ACs that I work with.
And when you say build the camera, that's putting a just to break it down even more, that's putting a lens on, a monitor, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's so many components that could be adapted to a camera these days, depending on the actual manufacturer of the camera, depending on the lens that you're trying to use with this camera. You could strip a camera down to these days to the bare basics, which is like, you know, a camera body, a magazine to, you know, record to, and a lens, and a battery. Sometimes though, you need to like totally outfit it to handle like a big long zoom. And that way you need support rods, you need a matte box, you need filters for it. Usually you're going to need that type of thing. And so the more challenging the conditions, the more challenging the more challenging the conditions, and depending on what it is you're actually trying to photograph or film within those conditions, the more likely the camera can get built up, if that makes sense. And so, again, at the end of the day, there is a possibility to have like an insane amount of components that need to be attached to a camera.
And what pop song did you and Hero bond over?
Oh, that's actually really curious. I don't know if there was one. I think we just bonded over each other's, like, you know, positive, positivity towards one another. I was a fan of work, and I think he liked mine. And we had mutual friends. I think I met Hero through David Altobelli, actually, director David Altobelli. I think that's how that relationship kind of came about.
And you work with a lot of different directors. Is that typically, you know, Joe Cafali, Matt Bowman, like you mentioned, David Altobelli, Fourclops. You've worked with a variety of different directors who all seem to be kind of close. Is it pretty much a personal relationship with everybody?
It's interesting. I think I'm super blessed to have like some really incredible friends and coworkers who I'm happy to call friends. In Los Angeles, in New York, kind of all around the country. And it's amazing how like effectively smaller my world becomes as I grow older. In the sense that everybody kind of seems to know somebody. You know, it's like the Kevin Bacon, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, but like in real life, if that makes sense. I know Hero through a number of people, including David Altobelli, but some of those people might not know David directly. So it's like it's that type of, you know, I guess, ordinary situation, actually.
It all seems to come back to Hero a lot. I don't know. He seems to come up a lot on his podcast.
Yeah, I mean, Hero has done an incredible amount of work. He's extremely prolific, you know? And his work's, you know, aside from being prolific, it's, like, very good. He has, incredible taste, and he's very talented. And so Hero's friends that work in film, that work in art, are talented as well in their own way. He's a good he's a good starting point, so to speak.
Roads lead to Hero. Right. All roads lead to Hero on this podcast because we're just like constantly talking about his music videos. It's just like, oh, right. Everything he makes is great, so let's talk about it.
And then sometimes you'll see a video where, like, did Hero work with this? And you'll scroll to the very bottom of the credits, and it's like, you know,
VFX. It's like a
thank you, Hero. Yeah, something like that.
It's just people throwing up props.
Well, we have a slate of music videos to talk to. Some of them suck, and some of them are awesome. Speaking of awesome videos, but like we mentioned, if you want to check out Kevin's work, including the URL swimmoves.com, which has so much more than just music videos, including the aforementioned short, which is very short, less than a minute, Basketballs with a Z. All those links will be in the show notes at imvdb.com. You are on a lot of sites, Kevin. You have on Body Holographic and a few other ones as well.
Yeah, that's a particularly old site, actually. I'm pretty terrible at the internet, I think. and I've never, honestly, I'm it's kind of embarrassing, I guess. But I'm okay with it because there's so many other people that are way better at it than me. And a lot of them are my friends, and they can like kind of help me out with like getting things done when I, you know, need a hand. But my patience is often tried with like getting my work on a place that's like viewable. It's like a real, I'm like my own worst enemy there, I guess. But yeah.
Well, one of those places we manage, and so we'll help you out and get as much as you can.
Thank you so much. That's so sweet of you.
Yeah, we have one of those places. So and that's why it'll be in the show notes. So you see some of your work, and we'll make sure it's all. By the time people are listening to this, it's gonna be full of even more. So sweet. And also, I have to one look at your Twitter account. I disagree that you're bad at the internet, because that's hilarious. You don't tweet very frequently, but there's some gems in there. You drop some gems.
Thank you, man. That means a lot, I guess. You know.
No, we don't give Twitter compliments on this podcast very often. So
can't wait till Christmas.
Cool. Well, let's talk about. Because we could talk about Twitter accounts all night, but we should talk about some of this week's music videos. And I personally would like to start with Tron Song by Thundercat, directed by Eric Andre. You guys okay with starting with this video? I think it'd be cool.
For sure.
Cool. If anyone listening is not familiar with Eric Andre, he is a comedian. He's actually from Boca Raton, represent. He's a comedian. He has a television show on Adult Swim called The Eric Andre Show. It is produced by Tim and Eric's production company, Absolutely Productions. And it's insane. It's one of the most hilarious, deranged shows you could see. And the way this video came about, because Eric Andre doesn't frequently direct music videos, this is part of a Jash series. Jash is a web online channel that Tim and Eric are also a part of. And they have a series of 5K series where they give a comedian and a musician $5,000 to make a music video. And Chance the Rapper and Hannibal Buress did one last year. And this year, they gave Eric Andre and Thundercat $5,000, and this Tron Song music video is the result of that. And it's insane. Can someone even explain what happens in this video? Should we just talk about some of the elements? What should we do from here?
It is full of. Well, first of all, you should mention that it is shot and kind of morphed into like a not just like a 90s VHS style, but a very jittery, like this tape has been, you know, there's like 10 passes of like daytime TV taped on the VHS that this is on. But it is, there are a lot of really kind of disturbing things in this that I did not expect. At one point, Thundercat is shitting into a giant sandbox, cat box. There's a few, I think I've blocked a few of these out of my mind. I don't know.
He then discovers, after that, he discovers a gun and then starts immediately shooting himself in the crotch.
That's part, I think, is that him finding a gun in the cat box, like the literal sandbox, whatever it is. I really found that amazing.
He just, because first he like discovers some like dark black object, and you're like, oh, I know where this is going, and then you don't, because nobody imagines that happening except for, of course, Eric Andre. Another thing we should mention is there's like a ton of effects that are like made to look like they're from the future, but since everything's got this VHS 90s feel, obviously it looks like terrible, intentionally terrible. A lot of like green screen dudes just like coming out of nowhere and moving around. It's incredibly violent, and all the way up until like the very end where Eric Andre makes an appearance and has a staring contest with Thundercat, and his head blows up for no reason.
Very Cronenberg. Yeah.
It's also very, very Eric Andre's. This, if you watch, you know, this is his style, and kind of very Tim and Eric too. There's like a Tim and Eric style that you can kind of point to that they kind of popularized, particularly with Tim and Eric Awesome Show, Great Job, and that's kind of carried through into the Eric Andre Show and into this video.
There's a moment in this video that I laugh the most at, and it's really, really short. It's when he is shooting himself repeatedly in the crotch with the gun.
That's my favorite part too. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. And then there's like a little like piece of the music that sounds like a spring. It's like boing or something, and he flies off the moon or something. And it was hilarious.
And it's great too because they're shot like clearly on a green screen, like knees up, but like so when he rockets away, the rocket's just like at his shin. It's not like at his feet or anything.
Yeah. I was taking notes, just like writing down my thoughts, and I wrote the other highlight was when he was firing the gun at his dick in space and launching upwards. And I'm like, well, that's just an enticing enough sentence, you know, to like really kind of, you know, keep me in totally invested and interested in this video.
Right. That could have been the treatment. And that would have been enough. I don't believe there is a treatment for these videos. Like we talked to Hannibal Buress and Austin Vesely, who co-directed the video with Hannibal. And basically, the way it works is they just like go into the Jash office, they get a $5,000 check, and they say, "Do what you will." It's a really insane way to make a music video. It's nothing like what it's like in reality.
I was watching this thing, and I'm like, "Who directed this? How?" Like, what is the relationship between Thundercat and this director that they're going this distance, you know, so comfortably?
Right.
Then I guess it started to make sense.
Right. Yeah. When you start to kind of piece it together and see where it goes, but yeah, it's very very intense. But like, and like we mentioned, you're hearing this like dude shooting himself in the crotch and stuff, and like, yes, it's violent and there's a lot of like shitting and cats, but it's also like it's so insane and it's like presented in such like a way that it's actually hilarious. Like it's not violent at all. Like this video is tagged with police brutality, and it's just like that's just because at one point there's just like a cop punching Thundercat in the face for no reason, and then they both get hypnotized by like a cat in a window. So it's not really.
And the song is so dissonant as well. It's not like a catchy song. There's a little bit of a. The song, maybe I'm way off base and I'm insulting this guy, but the song sounds a little bit like a comedy act as well.
It's not a Thundercat, I wouldn't call it like a comedy act, but it's like something that certainly like lends itself to this type of video, like very like interesting and I can't, Thundercat's an artist, it's hard to kind of pigeonhole him, yeah, but yeah. If he fits this video fits it perfectly. Anyway, that was a fun one. That's fun. I'm glad we talked about that. Let's talk about another one now. Let's go with the 1975 Hard Out. You guys down with this one?
1975.
This was the one where the kids. This was the one where the kids are playing the part of the band members in a what appears to be a talent show. And this is directed by Adam Powell and Matthew Healy. Matthew Healy is the lead singer of the 1975. So this is a fun video. I think I enjoyed this video a lot. Adam Powell works frequently with the 1975, and so it adds another layer to this video because essentially the kids. And this is one of the things I love so much about this video is the kids, particularly the kid who plays Matthew Healy, gives like a fantastic performance. If you compare like other Matthew Powell performance videos of the 1975, like this is treated really similarly, and it makes sense. And the kids give a fantastic performance, and they're dressed the same. Matthew Healy has a very interesting hairstyle that the kid takes on. So yeah, super super fun video. Did you guys like this one?
I thought my first thought was that I don't like the song and the syncopation with the visuals is weird. But then that was just like a little like preamble, and then it kind of launched in, and it still felt a bit weird. Launched in a little too quickly for me. The shot of the old people looking astonished and clapping didn't really work for me. But the rest of it is kind of charming. I thought, you know. The photography is nice, and there's definitely some solid variety in the shot design. It doesn't, in the end, go enough places for me, but I think the edit is quite tight. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that, Kevin, in terms of... Especially the shot of the old people with the... And, I don't mean to insult the video or Adam Powell, Mike Healy, or anything like that. It just feels a little too knowing or contrived in a way. Like, you know, we're going to do something weird. Let's get old people. Let's make it, you know, the audience really small. Let's have these girls kind of doing something awkward. Right. I always feel like you can kind of tell when it's coming from a place of, oh, we're going to do this, you know, and make it this way, or if it's actually sort of coming from a place where, and where there's an authenticity to it. And it's there's a difference between that, you know, this and like the Tron song in a way, which are they're totally two different videos, but they are both kind of grasping at the same thing. They want you to be kind of shocked and feel like this is weird. But in the end, I think one is more successful than the other.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I guess you can draw a connection because there is a video that feels kind of like that Tron song video. And the Eric Wareheim MGMT youth video that also has kids performing. And that feels weird. It does. Like, obviously, it feels super weird. And those elements certainly weren't what drew me to this video. I was more drawn to the kid's performance as the 1975, and like the way the kid nailed it. I do agree though that there, I wish it went somewhere else, and it does. And I kind of also really like the very ending where the kids kind of walk off stage and then the fireworks hit. That was kind of like a good beat for me at the end there too. But I agree that the like awkward mm-hmm. element feels tacked on to the video, and the twerking girls.
We can bring this back to Hero, because this has shades of the Shady Love, for Scissor Sisters.
Right, we can bring... Okay, so all roads do lead back to Hero. Whenever somebody doesn't do something well, we can point to a Hero video that did it better. Shady Love, which is, interestingly enough, full of kids from the first year of OMG Cameras Everywhere. A fun fact.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's fun. A couple of them were at the second year as well. But yeah, they were all OMG kids, which is fun. I think they tried not to do that, but it was kind of too perfect. So let's talk about Les Sins Bother. Les Sins, who I don't know if I'm saying his name right. This is Tori Ima. I don't say anything right. Somebody say that guy's name better for me.
It doesn't matter. But okay, doesn't matter. What does matter is the fact that this is directed by Harry's, which is a directing duo that is either no longer together or have changed their name.
Yeah, I don't want to fan any flames of rumors. There's nothing that necessarily indicates that these guys have broken up other than these rumors. However, it's interesting, the video is, some outlets are calling it Harry's, but they took a point on their Vimeo account, which is where this video was released, to credit themselves individually. Now, I don't know if they're just going to go... as far as we know, they could just go forward and be crediting themselves individually, and that's how it's going to work. But it is interesting. It's something that we're going to pay attention to, because, yeah, they were going – everything was released as Harry's and not this. So that's fun.
So the kind of concept of this video is very easy to explain. I believe these are called wacky waving inflatable – somethings.
That's what they were called on episode of Family Guy, I think.
No. Where... this is what they are actually called.
The word
or something like that.
What's that
again?
Aren't they called Sky Dancers?
I thought it was Sky Dancers. I didn't know that the name Wacky was actually in the name of these things, but I believe that, and it's definitely a thing. And Adam just provided me a link from an Amazon thing that says inflatable wacky waving tube man. So. he proved me wrong with one click of the mouse.
This is not available on Amazon Prime, but it is only $129.99, and it is in stock.
And there's a few more. Some of them are called inflatable air dancer tube mans, fly guys. You know, you've seen them outside of your favorite used car dealership. It's a thing. It just kind of spurts air through a man made of nylon. Man meaning just like a tube and arms. And it waves around. And basically what Harry's have done is put one of these tube men in a ton of beautiful landscapes. And, you know, kind of a lot of times it's, you know, framed really wide. And, you know, the tube man is in the distance. He's always, like, staring off into the sunset. all the while waving like a used car, like he would at a used car dealership. So it was a really interesting, for me, juxtaposition of those two images. This tube man that you typically see at these tacky locations in these really beautiful settings.
At the beginning of this, I was like, whoa, how are they going to do this for 3 minutes and 38 seconds? But that's kind of one of the genius things about Harry's, where they can take something that seems kind of like, oh, how can I sit through this for 3 minutes? And by the end, you're like, oh, shit, that's over. Like, I just tweeted one of my favorite screenshots from this video at the Art of Music video Twitter account and Facebook account, which you should totally follow. And it is of this wacky waving inflatable tube man kind of peering over a hedge at these two ladies who are sunning themselves.
That's an amazing moment for sure. And it happens, I think, at a perfect point in the video.
It does, right when you need it to happen.
I mean, this concept is so prime to use, right? Like, I'd be surprised if it hasn't been used already in a video. This thing, you know, this wacky whatever the fuck sky is. It's funny, like, I have a friend who was just talking to me about a video, not necessarily a music video, but a project involving one of these things just the other day. And as soon as I started watching this video today, I was like, oh, shit, I have to tell this kid. So I sent him the link immediately. You know, that said, you know, I really actually liked this video. I thought the syncopation with the music was quite strong. I love the close-up of the cars in the beginning. I wish they were a little more stable, with a little more contrast, but I think that's just based on, you know, that's just the look. I think it may have been shot on film, at least processed to look like it was shot on film, like 16 millimeter, it seemed.
Well, Harry's worked frequently with Evan Proflosky, so I do believe that they favor film.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, so that makes sense to... That makes sense, like, indeed. And I think there's some burnouts and whatnot in the edit that point to that. But I really did like the visual style. I thought it was quite beautiful, more often than not. And I really appreciated the reach of the video. And, like, them making this concept work for, like, you know, 3.5 minutes, like you said, you know, it's pretty brilliant. I liked it, yeah.
And I think that's one of the, you know, when you get down to it, when you talk about, like, what makes a good director or director duo above, you know, a crappy director. And I think one of, like, the things that's unique to music videos is taking something that is a music video concept that could be over in 20 seconds. And you could maybe, you know, maybe somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing could have say everything they have to say about that in 20 seconds. But it takes somebody who really knows what they're doing to flesh that out to 3 minutes. And we see it all the time with concepts. I think we have a few videos in the list like this where you're like, are we really going to do this, you know, for the whole time? And it just, you know...
And they actually burn out.
And they do burn out, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Harry's have a really great way of making you kind of, like, get excited about, like, the very subtle differences from shot to shot. And, like, and their previous collaborations with Tori are the same. The Say That video is very similar, kind of like Tori dancing in the distance, in these different, like, landscapes and stuff. And it's, you know, you see a lot of similarities and they make it work all the time. Cool dudes. Hope they didn't break up, because I like them.
And one of the other videos that I think probably does this, and it's a staff pick, so maybe I shouldn't be bad-mouthing it, but it's Kiss and Tell by LaRue. And I'm not just...
So it does do this. Well, just real quick before we move, I'm sorry, because we might as well just say why. The only reason we think that they could have broken up is because Chris Black has been tweeting it. Let's just, like, we could just put that out there and say...
Is that Chris's fault? God damn it, Chris.
Chris Black has been tweeting it, and that is what kind of has put
that
out there.
Is that why you texted me on a Sunday and say, Harry's broke up? I'm in line at Trader Joe's. And I
listen, okay, it. Listen. I give you tips when I get them, all right? And that's where it starts.
Oh, it's fine if it's on a Sunday. It was just like bad news to get on a Sunday.
I didn't mean to fuck up your Trader Joe's. All right, let me just put that
Trader
out.
Trader Joe's, they have unbelievable cracker selection.
I believe it. They just put one down here, even though I hate it here. But listen, just like... He said that before this video came out, right? And then this video came out, and they were credited separately. And that's it. That's why we thought that that could be the case because Chris Black said it. So let's not pretend like we heard it from some place. That's where that.
Let's
that
not pretend we have any inside information.
We certainly don't. But it is interesting that they were then after that was said that they were then credited separately on this video, but not separately like two lines, just not as Harry's as their two names. I think that Chris is speculating and that they actually. Just want their names out there in addition to their duo name, which I think makes a lot of sense. And so that we can confirm. Let's talk about LaRue. Kiss and not tell. Kiss and not tell. This is a video, although I like this one a lot too. It does it's a single kind of idea that they run with the whole time, and that's LaRue as a TV call girl, sexy call girl.
Well,
that's not what you call. That's not what they're called. They're not called call girls.
Sex phone hotline operator.
Sex kind phone. Of.
But there's
it's a girl that you call.
There's the song kind of lends this a little bit because the basic concept is a lot. It's very colorful. There's a lot of close ups of LaRue and all the phones are vintage, and the kiss and not kiss and not tell is repeated perhaps 400 times in this song, and every single time they say it in the song, the text comes up. That says kiss and not tell, as well as a phone number, which I did try to call that I did not get through.
You did it. So, yeah, whatever. I still liked it. Came out late on a Sunday night. I was excited about a fun video, and I staff picked it, okay? Sue me. Let's talk about... Sue me. I like that. I like LaRue. Let's talk about a video that we can all agree isn't good. The Jack...
Janoskeans. Yeah.
That's what she said.
And Kevin, I wanted to talk to you about this video because this is also a beach video. This features stuff on the beach. Very, very, very.
Similar to the
video. Yeah, super similar to the video that you were done this week.
Yeah, we wanted to avoid that reach of the wide lens that they kind of employed in this video. But you're right. There's some. Yeah, no, I guess this video was done well, right? Like,
it's well made. We put this is on our watch list because this will be one of the two most popular videos of the week. Number two.
It's crazy to me. I really hate the music. I couldn't get past it.
That's fair. We understand that. This is a. Can we call this like ska? This is what that reminds.
Yeah, I think something like that, right? It certainly sounds familiar.
It's a very ska influence, and I didn't realize that type of music we're in now. Maybe it's just that these guys are handsome boys, and that could be why they're popular. But I didn't like this video very much. Should we talk about it anyway? Who's this guy? This guy's Steve, the director, Steve Jokes. He used to be like this drummer of Sum 41 or something like that. That's what the internet says. So that's cool.
Yeah, he's done when I watched this video, I actually went to his page on our site and watched all of his videos for the Janoskeans, and we actually have talked about another one of his videos.
Oh, the Real Girls Eat Cake video.
The Real Girls Eat Cake video, which, funnily enough, also has a token fat girl in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know who these kids are. I can't place them in any sort of physical, geographical place. And I can't fit them to any sort of... This is how out of touch I am. I can't really fit them into any sort of category. It's like they're like the ska, like, sexually explicit version of One Direction.
Okay. I get that. That is a good combination, and the song is basically just a bunch of Michael Scott jokes over and over again, and they say that's what she said after them.
Yeah, but the video is kind of the video is full of like really dirty like Beatles Hard Day's Night esque jokes. If the Beatles were super dirty and made a video in 2014,
and also a little bit of like Austin Powers stuff, where like stuff is happening in the foreground. And stuff is happening in the background, and they look like they're happening together. You know, like a dude is bent over, and somebody sticks a umbrella in the ground that he obscures, so it looks like the umbrella is being stuck up his ass. And, like, that kind of stuff is also happening in this video. This band's super popular, guys. Why?
I've never heard of them before in my life, so...
Now, I don't want to, like... Because I feel like there is a way to kind of, like, do this kind of, like... goofy party fun video and have it really work. And we talked about it on that this podcast, the Doses and Mimosas video directed by Zach Merck. Adam, you remember that one?
I do, yeah.
I feel like that's got some similar elements in it, but for me it just it's a video that just works a lot better. And maybe I just hate this song so much. I'm just like dumping on this video.
Well, the other issue with this video too is that you can definitely. I hate videos that where you. Or I don't dislike when videos reveal themselves in the process too much. Like you can very, very easily tell that this was shot. You know, there was like a 1 day shoot. They have the exact same group of like 10 people, and they're like confined to one geographical area, which kind of takes me out of it a little bit. I don't know.
And then they're like the casting as well. It's just like, all right, we need the fat girl and the old guy, and everyone else will be hot.
Yes.
That was it. And that's this video. Well, cool. Glad we talked about that. That was productive. I think we should squeeze in this metronomy one, right?
Sure. Should we add this one to the end here? This was a video that is directed by Callum Cooper. I think it initially came out with the wrong director on it because we took the director off the YouTube description, and then the production company producer was tweeting at us saying that's the wrong deal. And yeah, so this person, Callum Cooper, is kind of works in this visual style, and the visual style is this camera angle. Actually, Kevin, when you watch this video, did you get any sense of like how they possibly did this?
Yeah. I mean, like, my first thought was like, "Holy fuck! How are they doing this?" I was really hypnotized, kind of throughout the video. I thought it was pretty visionary, and it's interesting to me. I didn't look into the director's other work, but it's interesting to me that you're saying that this is kind of like a through line in some of his other work. Is that true? Like this kind of roving, kind of rotating camera.
I don't know. I think he's done it in a music video before, but I believe that this is something that he's experimented with. This visual style.
It makes sense as kind of like a leaping point for inspiration. This idea had to come to him somehow, and whether it was just in kind of like not necessarily by accident, but just like experimenting enough with cameras to get a sense of like how a camera can move with a certain lens length and like looking down or like looking up or to the side, and like how it could move in that type of very fluid, almost cinematic kind of arcing movement. It makes sense that there would be like some sort of preliminary like idea, like some pre-visualization to that. I could be wrong here. I think it seemed like it was some sort of smaller camera on a boom of some sort, and it was just kind of using that boom as like a jib, kind of, and just like kind of making this arcing motion with it.
Mm-hmm. When you say smaller camera, do you mean like a GoPro or something, or do you mean like a DSLR?
I thought for a minute, like, maybe this is a GoPro because, like, honestly, those things aren't that terrible these days at all. And that said, I didn't notice any, like, kind of auto exposure correcting. I mean, the photography overall, the exposure in this video was quite, you know, quite good from my memory. So maybe not. I didn't see any, like, auto exposure functions happening, not to get really nerdy. I would say maybe a smaller camera just as like a means of assistance. I noticed in the credits it was just like him. But then he had two first assistants for camera. So, you know, fuck, guys, I don't know. It's like magic. No, I don't know. It's there's a myriad of ways of probably accomplishing this.
It's funny that you know, this visual style is so amazing. And then the dominant color in the video by far is like this gray concrete, which I thought was a really interesting choice. Neither good nor bad.
I thought so too. I was really interested in that. I thought that was kind of awesome. I don't know. It managed to be again hypnotic on like very subtle levels, as well as like this one kind of big, you know, scopic vision, like the way the camera would move and how you would move in that universe. I think down to those like subtle ideas of the architecture, and like you said, like these like, you know, gray brick stones and mortar, like, how that would like kind of, you know, work to draw you in as an audience. I don't know. It's all pretty interesting.
And it reminded me a bit of you know, Michel Gondry's kind of style in you know, for maybe like early 2000s to mid 2000s music videos, where the concept was very much you know, the style and sort of the spectacle of it, which is funny because another track off this album, Love Letters, was directed by Michel Gondry a few months ago, which is one of the, you know, the few videos that he's directed in the last few years. Seem to be a musical artist that kind of attract or seek out that kind of director.
And then also that will buy into their vision entirely. And, you know, I don't think you're going to get any band to just be like, all right, so for this music video, you guys are going to be running around stairs the whole time. Like, I don't think you'll necessarily get everybody to sign on to, you know, not performing at all and instead just running up and down stairs. And so, you know, I think Metronomy, you know, recognizes the value in a creative video. And, you know, if you look back through all of their music videos, you know, you're going to be impressed for different reasons for all of them. So they're just really a great music video band. Yeah, and there's a Megaforce video from 2008 for A Thing For Me, which is really, really good. Their video for I'm Aquarius by Edward Saylor, I think is how you say his name, also really, really awesome. They just, yeah, like I said, and also The Babe, directed by David Wilson, all really, really fantastic music videos. So yeah, they like music videos.
And one of these has to be directed by Hero.
No hero video for Metronomy, but maybe one day.
So I guess we should end it by saying, Hero Mariah, if you're listening, it just all goes. It, you know, you're the kind of the crossroads of the of music videos right now. It's just the way it is.
Just deal with it.
Deal with it.
Deal with it, Hero. That'd be a weird name for this podcast.
Yeah, deal with it, Hero. He's probably gonna want to listen to that. What did you say, Kevin?
I said I like that name. That's a good name for sure.
Cool.
We got thumbs up all around for the name. I think that's it.
I think that's it. No Adam Alexander to rule us out. Adam Alexander, wait a minute, guys, because that's what he does. Not true at all. That's now the worst joke of the podcast. Let's end on that. Was fun. Where do we find stuff, Adam?
Well, you can find stuff. You can find pretty much everything at the amazing site. I don't know who made it, but somebody made it. IMVDB.com. It's funny. Sometimes we get tweets that say, like, I never knew this existed. And that happened a lot this week, which is always fun. Because, you know, people, I guess they just are like, does maybe this exist? And they go find it.
They probably found us in Stereo Gum because Stereo Gum said our name last week.
Stereo Gum, but no link, Stereo Gum. You got to do the link.
You got to do the link, Stereo Gum.
It's like tweet favorites, don't pay the bills. Okay, get those retweets.
Only the retweets.
So you can find this at imvdb.com/podcast. This is episode 123. And there you will find so many awesome episodes with so many awesome people. Last week we had Alon Isuchana on. And you will find, if you want to, 2 episodes with Hiro Murai, if you want to go back there. Those are from a while. I think our original Hero interview is like the 9th episode of the podcast. So you got to go a bit way back. But Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. This was awesome.
Yeah, fellas, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And we will see you guys next week.